Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Second hour of Open Forum today on Catholic Answers Live. Thank you very much for being with us. Thank you to all of you joining us on YouTube Live, Facebook Live, and Periscope as well. Special hello to you. And you can use the phone number, 888-318-7884, just like everyone else does, or you have the option of typing in a question, and we will try to get to those questions throughout the hour. If we can, Open Forum means you pick the topic, and it can be very wide-ranging, having to do with any topic, having to touch on that touches on our life, our religious life, our moral life. Our guest this hour is Jimmy Akin, senior apologist here at Catholic Answers and the author of A Daily Defense, 365 Days Plus One to Becoming a Better Apologist, among many other things. And you can always find him at – well, you can't find him there, but you can always find his work and his comments and his thoughts at jimmyakin.com. Hi, Jimmy.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm well.
Good.
And I'm starting to – well, I was going to say I'm starting to like it when you're on, but I don't
– that's even better.
No, I mean, because we do these little after-show things.
Keep me updated on how that process
on how I'm feeling about you.
Yeah.
I'm feeling all right about you. But no, we do these after-shows. So anybody joining us on any of those live streaming services, we will be on for a little while after to
And also within a day or so, I'll have it on my YouTube channel too. So people can watch there if they can't watch, like if they're listening in their cars or something.
Did you happen to catch Rose Sweet yesterday?
I did. Yeah. It was a nice after-show. I like that.
Okay. Well, we can only talk about the after-show in the after-show.
Okay.
That's a new rule. I just made that up. That's a new after-show.
Okay.
And you're like not convinced. Whatever. Why are you making up rules? So that's what that face says.
I don't need rules, man.
No, I don't. The man is just putting his foot on the back of my neck. 888-318-7884 is the number. 888-31-TRUTH. And I usually start with a question for you from your own book, A Daily Defense.
Sure.
I try every time to – I try to read the question in a kind of grumpy voice. And so this question is day 104. And by the way, just to remind y'all, A Daily Defense, it doesn't start on January 1st. It's a year plus one of daily defenses, but you can start it at any time. So this comes from day 104. Jesus prophecy unfulfilled, question mark. If Jesus' speech on the Mount of Olives referred to the destruction of the temple in AD 70, and then he falsely prophesied that he would return before then, saying that people will see the Son of Man coming in clouds with great power and glory.
Then
isn't that a prophecy unfulfilled?
No, there are several things here. First one is Jesus makes a number of predictions regarding what people are going to see and when. And at one point, he makes the famous prediction that there are some standing here now who will not taste death before. And then in different gospels, it's slightly differently. But in one of them, it says something along the lines of before they see the Son of Man coming in glory or the kingdom coming in glory or things like that. And a lot of people have taken that as a reference to the second coming and saying, well, they're all dead now, so that obviously didn't happen. But what they don't notice is that in all three of the synoptic gospels, which is where this occurs, it's not in John, but it's in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, is there's immediately a time cue that says like, and so many days later, this happened. And what happens next is they see the transfiguration of Jesus, where they go up on a mountain, three of them, Peter, James, and John, go with Jesus up on a mountain and they see him transfigured in heavenly glory. And that's what he's talking about on that occasion. He's not talking about the second coming. He's talking about this manifestation of his heavenly glory that some of the people with him right then, Peter, James, and John, were going to see in this life. And all three of these gospels make the connection between that prophecy and they say, and so many days later, then this amazing heavenly event happened. So that shows us that Jesus, when Jesus talks about a coming of the kingdom or his coming or things like that. He's not just talking about the second coming. We have to be more attentive to other possible meanings. And that amplifies even further when you look at the Old Testament, because there are all kinds of passages in the Old Testament that talk about God coming and God visiting his people and stuff like that. And they're not, in the literal sense, referring to Jesus' coming. They're referring to events where God comes either to comfort his people or to judge his people. And so you have this, and God doesn't physically manifest on these occasions, but nevertheless, his visitation of comfort or his visitation of judgment is conceived prophetically, symbolically, as a visitation. And so it's natural to take that and apply it to Jesus as well. And so Jesus can have actually multiple comings during the course of history, depending on what he's doing. Also, one of the key passages, and you can tell this because of the words that get used, but one of the key passages that gets applied to Jesus from the Old Testament is from the book of Daniel, where you have you see, Daniel sees a vision of God in heaven and one like a son of man, which is Jesus's favorite designation for himself, comes to the one on the throne, God, on clouds and with glory, and is himself seated on a throne and given everlasting dominion. And so Jesus like quotes this when he's talking to the high priest and says, actually he's talking, he's in front of the high priest, but he's also in front of the Sanhedrin. And he says, from now on, y'all, and it is y'all in Greek, not just you. From now on, y'all are going to see the Son of Man coming with clouds of heaven and glory. And he's essentially saying, I'm the figure from that verse.
Yeah.
That's what he's talking about. From now on, I'm going to be seated at the right hand of God on my own throne in heaven.
Yeah.
That's what he means. He's not talking about the second coming. He's talking about his coming heavenly enthronement. And in the same way, just like God can have visitations of comfort or justice, the same thing can happen with Jesus. And so there's an aspect of that that's fulfilled in the destruction of Jerusalem. That's a visitation of divine justice on Jerusalem and was perceived as such even by Jewish people because Jerusalem doesn't get destroyed if it's not God's will. And so they might have different interpretations of why Jerusalem was destroyed, but it was acknowledged that this was a visitation of divine justice because of some kind of sin or sins that they had been committing. And so since Jesus is now ascended and reigning in heaven with his Father, that's a visitation of divine justice in a sense from Jesus, or that's how the prophets would describe it. And so we need to recognize that not all descriptions of Jesus as coming refer to the second coming.
Yeah. Yeah. 888-318-7884 is the number. And so when you say y'all, you mean that there's a plural you in
Greek.
Not that Jesus was talking like a hick.
No.
I shouldn't say talking like a hick.
Talking like a hick, dude.
That didn't come
y'all
out
is,
the way
y'all
I
is entering standard American English.
I even say it myself. So that was one of my best friends.
We should.
Use the word.
It's useful.
I have no idea why that I said most, talking like a hick. But I just meant that it has an implication of
connotation?
Connotation, maybe, yes, of a non-standard usage.
Which it is rapidly losing.
Which is rapidly losing, yes. Yeah. But so I apologize for using the word hick.
Thank you.
But that's not – you weren't saying Jesus was speaking non-standard Greek.
No.
Just that he was using a plural you.
Correct.
All you people.
Which they have in Greek.
Yeah, right. Most languages do, I think, and English is unique or somewhat unique.
And English used to have one. That's what ye is.
Yeah.
Ye was the standard plural you in English.
Right.
And then it dropped out. But there's a need for a plural you, and that's why you have these alternatives like you all and y'all and you-uns and yous coming back in different forms of dialectical because it's useful.
Right.
What's even fascinating is In some languages like Hebrew, there are distinctions even further in the second person, the you number, where they distinguish between male and female. So in Hebrew, not only do they have the second person you, they have a way of distinguishing between you a man and you a woman, and between y'all meaning men,
all you
and,
men.
And y'all meaning women.
Uh-huh. Wow.
Yeah.
And does that come up anywhere, like where we would understand scripture better if we saw that, or is that not?
Oh, sure. But it's hard to translate in standard English.
Yeah.
But give it 100 years, and once y'all is the norm, you'll start seeing it in the Bible.
You think y'all is more likely to be the norm than yous?
Yes.
Or,
yeah. It's clearly gaining. It's in standard American English, it's gaining usage frequency, and I would anticipate in 100 years or so it'll have lost its non-standard connotation.
Yeah, because all of you is too cumbersome.
Yeah.
It's just too cumbersome a plural.
Need a single word.
Yeah, right. All right, well, we'll take a break. We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live. Your questions coming up for Jimmy Akin. It is open forum today, and 888-318-7884 is still the number. We'll be right back with more on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live with Jimmy Akin is coming right back.
We've all heard the phrase, the new evangelization. In previous centuries, missionaries would travel to foreign lands to evangelize, but today's missionaries are more likely to focus on fallen away Catholic neighbors or relatives. But what about the old evangelization? The two millennia of Catholic missionary efforts by the likes of St. Paul, St. Augustine of Canterbury, St. Francis Xavier, and most importantly, our Lord Himself. We must not forget the methods they used to spread the faith to the farthest reaches of the world. Our situation may be new, but the essentials of evangelization always remain the same. In his new book, The Old Evangelization, How to Spread the Faith Like Jesus Did, author Eric Sammons provides a practical guide to putting these essentials into practice in everyday use in your interactions with family, friends, coworkers, and even fellow parishioners. Order your copy of The Old Evangelization today by calling 1-888-291-8000, logging on to the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Catholic Answers Live comes to EWTN Television.
Hi, this is Cy Kellett. Join me for a show dedicated to Catholic apologetics and evangelization as we connect viewers to prominent leaders in the church today and touch on just about everything relating to the church, from doctrinal issues to family concerns, social issues, evangelization, ethics, you name it.
Catholic Answers Live TV, Saturday, 10 p.m. Eastern on EWTN Television.
Do you want to end abortion, halt the attack on traditional marriage, and ensure religious freedom for ourselves and for our grandchildren? To do this, we must convert the culture. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a grassroots initiative that recognizes this need and takes it to the streets. If you're interested in peacefully sharing the gospel in your area, visit streetevangelization.com to learn more.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back, y'all, to Catholic Answers Live. Thanks for being with us. 888-318-7884 is the number. 888-31-TRUTH. It is open forum, and Jimmy, I think we better get some calls.
Let's. That would be great.
Let's go to Andrea in San Antonio, Texas, listening on 89.7. Andrea, thanks for waiting. What's your question for Jimmy Akin?
Well, first I have a small comment. Y'all here in Texas is the standard. So just to settle the discussion.
May I just say something about that, Andrea?
He was doing penance during the break, by the way.
I immediately regretted what I said. I was shocked at myself. And on one side of me, I have Nick from Texas, who said the exact same thing you just said.
And on the other side, you have Jimmy from Texas.
Yeah, so. Right. So I apologize for the implication of my comment. Andrea, go ahead.
Well, I had a question. My coworker and I were talking the other day, and she said that somewhere in the Bible, after Jesus has risen, when the women find that the stone, and they, you know, the angel appears to them and says, no, he's risen, he's not here. They went back and they told the disciples. Well, the disciples took it upon themselves to say, well, no, there's no way that he would have been here unless, you know, he would have been in the form of a ghost, like he would have been a ghost.
Mm-hmm.
And she kept trying to point out.
Breaking up,
Andrea,
a little bit.
Do you have enough information to address her?
Well, I think she's asking about where it talks about this in Scripture. Is that accurate?
Right, exactly.
Okay.
That's where I'm trying to find. Is there is there a gospel reading or is there a reading in the Bible that says that they thought he was a ghost or that they said that?
Yep, absolutely. It's in the Gospel of Luke. You want to look in Luke chapter 24. this is after the encounter on the road to Emmaus. Jesus appears to the disciples, and to prove that he's not a ghost, he eats in their presence. And so, and he says, you know, in essence, you know, see me, handle me, a spirit has not flesh and bones as I do. And this is a very interesting thing because this is actually the second non-resurrection interpretation of this event that we've encountered. Because sometimes you'll encounter people who say, well, this was all some kind of a hallucination. They were all desperately hoping that Jesus would be resurrected, and they kind of convinced themselves that he was. Well, that's not what the Gospels show, actually. In the Gospels, they have to be drug to the interpretation that he's resurrected. The first interpretation, when the women show up and they don't find him in the tomb, the first interpretation, and the reason they don't think he's resurrected, even though he said he's going to rise from the dead, is because they weren't expecting anybody to rise from the dead. They were expecting the resurrection to take place on the last day, at the end of time, at the end of history. And so they're not expecting anybody to rise from the dead now. And so that was the standard Jewish understanding of when the resurrection is going to happen. And that's the understanding they stick with until they're forced to another conclusion. So when the women show up at the tomb and it's empty, and their first thought is the body's been stolen. And we see that in the Gospel of John, where Mary thinks Jesus's body has been stolen.
Yeah.
And later she encounters angels that explain what's happened, and then she encounters Jesus himself. But she initially thinks the body's been stolen. And so that's the first interpretation. And it's a non-resurrection interpretation of the event. And then when it's become clear that, no, something more than that's happened, and Jesus actually appears to the disciples so they can see him, they still don't think he's been raised. They think it's a spirit. We're seeing a ghost, which was another thing that people believed could happen, that a ghost could appear to you. And we can document that elsewhere in the New Testament. So they still aren't interpreting it as he's been raised from the dead. They're thinking they're seeing a ghost. And it's only when they start handling him and seeing, hey, he's really physical, that that they realize actually what's happened is a resurrection has happened and the future age has begun to break in to the here and now.
That's a lot of resistance. I mean, a lot of just assuming this can't be happening.
Yeah.
And they have to work through it. I think we lost – I think the call dropped from Andrea. But Andrea, thank you for that call, and thank you for correcting me on my misuse of a certain word.
And now it's been corrected. No more needs to be said about it.
Okay. Thank you. Tim in Salem, Oregon, listening on Modern Day Radio. Tim, you are on with Jimmy Akin. What's your question?
Okay. Thanks, folks, for taking my call. I'm in an online debate with a non-Catholic in regards of the Immaculate Conception.
Okay.
And unsurprisingly, he threw Romans 3:23 at me, where it says, all have sinned, no one is righteous. Well, I responded with the Catholic answer, or that, all don't necessarily mean all. And I gave him a couple more examples of that. And he came back with me with, that is poor hermeneutics. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Hermeneutics. You're close.
Yes. And so I guess my question is, could you explain what hermeneutics is, and what would be a good Catholic response to this?
Okay. So hermeneutics is just a fancy word for interpretation or means of interpretation. When you interpret, when you approach any text, whether it's or any verbal expression, you need to interpret it to figure out what it means. That's true if someone's talking to you. It's true if you're reading something. And we all have certain rules or principles that we use when we're trying to figure out what something means. Like, and one of those is context is important. For example, if I say, put the kitty on the table, if I'm in a veterinarian's office, what kind of kitty am I talking about? Sigh.
The kitty that you have.
Okay. What kind of kitty is that?
You got to help me.
Well, what's the normal interpretation of, you know, I'm in a veterinarian office and the veterinarian says, put the kitty on the table. What kind of kitty are we discussing?
Oh, like a house cat.
Okay, very good. Mean? Exactly. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So now suppose I'm at a poker game and someone says, put the kitty on the table.
Right.
What kind of kitty are we talking about?
A chip or something. You have to put money into
your ante.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So you have to be sensitive to the context of something in order to properly interpret it. Otherwise, you can be entirely mistaken. You know, if I'm in the veterinarian's office and the doctor says, put the kitty on the table, and I slap down a poker chip.
Right.
I've made a mistake here.
Yes, right.
And so we have to be sensitive to context. And that's essentially the point, Tim, that you're making in this discussion, because now there are a bunch of different things you can say about Romans 3:23 and how it should be interpreted, but fundamentally you're correct. All have sinned in this passage, even though it's an absolute statement, says all, it doesn't mean that totally. Because it doesn't mean that absolutely. There are, when you consider the broader biblical worldview or the context of this statement that St. Paul makes, you become aware very quickly that there are others that have not sinned. And that includes Jesus, the second Adam. It includes Adam before the fall. It includes Eve before the fall. It includes all of the holy angels. It includes the Father and the Holy Spirit. Not all have sinned in the absolute sense. And even in Romans itself, to just use its literary context, if you look later on in Romans, Paul is talking about the twins, Jacob and Esau, and he talks about a time when they were still in the womb before they had done anything good or evil. So he says that. He acknowledges there's a time before these twins, and by implication, all other babies, had done anything evil. So it's not – he does not mean that all absolutely have sinned. There are exceptions, and so you have to take his statement in its proper context. And if there's an exception for Jesus, the second Adam, then there can be an exception for Mary, the second Eve. And now we can go a little further. So that's the fundamental answer. I would say your friend himself is practicing bad hermeneutics. He's using a bad system of interpretation because he's ignoring this broader context that has to do with what else Paul writes in Romans and the broader Jewish Christian worldview, which Paul subscribed to. Now, I can go a little bit further and give you a little more help on this. There's a concept known as the universe of discourse that sometimes linguists and philosophers talk about. The universe of discourse is the set of things that you're talking about. And for example, if I said – suppose you and I are talking about American presidents.
Yes.
And I said, who's your favorite? Well, you might propose one or another.
Calvin Coolidge.
Okay. So in the context of our discussion, if you say Calvin Coolidge is my favorite, you mean you like Calvin Coolidge better than your wife? Well, no, because the universe of discourse, the set of things we're talking about, is not all people.
Yeah.
It's all the presidents. And in the same way, Paul has a restricted or limited universe of discourse when he's talking about all have sinned. He obviously isn't including babies still in the womb. He obviously isn't including the holy angels. He obviously isn't including the Father and the Holy Spirit. He obviously isn't including Jesus, the second Adam. What he's talking about is ordinary people. And all ordinary people have sinned. We don't need to debate that. But the question then becomes, is Mary just an ordinary person, or does she have a special place in God's plan, like being the second Eve?
Tim,
Yes.
Oh, we saw you. So does that answer your question? Did it help you?
Yes, it helped out tremendously. Thank you so much.
Very, awesome. Very good, Tim. Thank you for that call. There have been times when I like Calvin Coolidge better than my wife, but we've worked through those.
Oh, good.
Yeah, we're in better shape now. 888-318-7884 is the number, 888-31-TRUTH. Open forum today on Catholic Answers Live. Jimmy Akin is our guest this hour, and we'll be right back with more on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live.
Hi, this is Trent Horn, and I'm here to tell you about my new book, Hard Sayings, A Catholic Approach to Answering Bible Difficulties. Have you ever read something in the Bible that confused you? Or has a skeptic ever asked you to explain a scandalous passage and you didn't know what to say? Doesn't Genesis contradict science? Why does the Bible promote slavery? How could God order his people to kill women and children? It's happened to just about everyone. But now you have a place to turn for the answers. In Hard Sayings, I look at dozens of the most confounding passages in Scripture and offer clear, reasonable, and Catholic keys to unlocking their true meaning. After reading this book, you'll be equipped to answer the toughest questions skeptics ask about the Bible. So don't be left without an answer again. Order your copy of Hard Sayings today by calling 1-888-291-8000, by visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or by asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
It's been called a crash course in salvation history, the perfect addition to CCD and RCIA reading lists. Catholic Answers' new graphic novel, The Big Picture, has set the Catholic book world on fire with its unique and innovative blend of apologetics and entertainment. With high-quality, full-color illustrations and a storyline that's easy to follow, The Big Picture reveals a story full of passion, suspense, adventure, and hope, engaging the reader immediately. As our heroes come face to face with the drama and mystery of God's plan for the salvation of the world, it gets readers talking and thinking, captivating and entertaining them with eternal truths presented in a non-threatening way. Get your friends and family talking about things that matter. Order your copy of The Big Picture today by calling 1-888-291-8000, logging on to Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Tomorrow morning on EWTN Radio, Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo. Teresa welcomes Doug Keck and Jeanette Benkovic. Also, Father Chris Allar will be on to talk about Divine Mercy Sunday. Catholic Connection airs weekdays at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific, and then on More to Life, Dr. Greg and Lisa Popchak explore the blessings and challenges of forgiveness. As we approach Divine Mercy Sunday, More to Life with Dr. Greg and Lisa Popchak airs weekdays at 10 a.m. Eastern, 7 Pacific, right here on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Jimmy Akin, our guest this hour, and you can also see Jimmy Akin on the new Catholic Answers TV show.
And you can see Cy Cullett there, too, and some other people.
Yeah. I feel like I should have had... Saturday, 10 p.m. Eastern...
That's when the new Catholic Answers show is going to debut.
Yeah. And you know what? Tom Price told me this because I wasn't not up on my stuff. But you can also watch it on the EWTN app if you have the EWTN app, maybe on your phone or your computer. So because there had been a question from someone in Canada who said, I don't get the cable TV. How do I watch this? And so you can get it on your app at the same time. It's a pretty good show. I kind of like it. Why are you laughing at me?
I'm not laughing. I'm smiling.
Is there something going on around here that I don't know about?
No, you just used a really endearing, objectifying article.
You're going to have to tell me. You want to tell me now?
Sure. So you said, imitating the person from Canada, or speaking on their behalf, you said, I don't have the cable TV.
Oh.
And so you got the definite article in there, in a way that kind of
adds a little distance.
It makes you sound a little old-fashioned.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I got it. I talk funny sometimes.
I don't have the cable TV.
You don't have that cable TV. 888-318-7884. Now you're going to get me in trouble again because now I'm going to start.
It's all part of my sinister plan.
You do. I know you have sinister plans. Don't even act like you don't, Jimmy Akin. Anne in San Diego, California, please save me from Jimmy Akin. You are on. What's your question?
I want to save you right now.
Thank you.
I just want to thank you both.
You may try.
Jimmy Akin. Jimmy Akin, it's an honor to be speaking with you.
The honor's all mine.
I want you to know I've turned to your articles for help in defending my Catholic faith. Mm-hmm. And I'm a revert to the Catholic faith since 2005, coming out of, evangelical Protestantism. So I just love our faith. And maybe you could just help me with this. I want to be really charitable, but it's been troubling to me since I've come back to the Catholic faith. And just to try to put it in a concise way, I've encountered priests and non-clerical Catholic educators since 2005 and just very recently, who seem to like to promote Buddha within the Catholic Church. And I think I understand that, you know, the concept that there can be good elements in all religions, maybe not all religions, but, you know, we're open to the fact that there's good elements. But the most recent, really troubling and disturbing experiences of this were just very recently hearing a prominent Catholic educator present Buddhism as a very good, but as a good choice. But Catholicism is a better choice.
Okay.
And without any kind of explication, there's also priests in San Diego County, and it's not just me, I thought it was me for a while, who experienced this, but I'm finding out a lot of people are encountering this. In the sacraments of reconciliation, they're given absolution, but then they're told there's no penance required because penance is legalistic. And my question at one time to the priest, with total respect, was, if there's no penance, why are you giving me absolution? You know, it's just not logical to me.
Anne, I'm not sure how I can help you here. Can you give it to me in a question form?
So the question is, you know, aren't as Catholics, you know, are we to turn to Jesus Christ, our Lord and Savior, and respect the first commandment? And why is Buddhism being, you know, sort of presented as a good choice for Catholics within the Catholic framework?
Well, I'm afraid I can't speak for other people. And so obviously, as Catholics, we need to turn to Jesus Christ. He is, as the Gospels say, the way, the truth, and the life. There are elements of truth in other religions, even in all other religions. That doesn't mean that they're all equal. They're not. They have varying levels of truth in them. In the case of Buddhism, now they're different and rather divergent Buddhist theologies. Not all Buddhism is the same. If you go back to the original historical core of Buddhism, which is represented today in what's known as Theravada Buddhism, which is the based on a closer reading of the original thoughts of Siddhartha Gautama, the original Gautama Buddha, then there's a substantial number of elements of truth in what he had to say that converges with Christian truth in a number of notable respects. I've written about that before. So I would suppose that to the extent you have people who are talking up Buddhism in a Catholic context, so to speak, they've probably come to appreciate the fact that there is a substantial degree of convergence on certain particular truths. Now, not all truths are found, unfortunately, in Buddhism, and Catholics and other Christians and Buddhists diverge on some questions. Buddhists do not, for example, present the way to be saved as through Jesus Christ, who is the way, the truth, and the life. And so they have a different understanding. They want to say that the way to achieve nirvana, the equivalent of heaven, although it's a little different, is through the application of the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path, which amounts to a kind of right living. And at least in this form of Buddhism, although it's different in others, it's not salvation through grace. It's salvation through your own efforts. And even in those forms of Buddhism that have an understanding of achieving the goal of existence through grace. It's not grace in Jesus Christ. And so there are differences, but there are elements of convergence as well. I would suspect to the extent that people have been discussing Buddhism in an inappropriate way, it would be due to either a failure to appreciate the differences and the importance of the differences between the groups, or a failure to properly articulate that. You mentioned hearing someone, I don't know who or where, but you mentioned hearing someone saying, well, Buddhism's a good choice, but Catholicism is better. Well, to you know, that's if you don't elaborate on what that means, that could be misunderstood to say from a Christian point of view, Buddhism is fine. It doesn't have any elements, you know, that are problematic, and that would be mistaken. But if you just mean there are elements within Buddhism that are good, but Catholicism has more, and in fact, all of the elements of goodness that God wants us to have, then that would be an accurate interpretation of the phrase. So presenting that statement out of context without some clarifying meaning, I can see where that would be problematic. Others may have made even more problematic statements. I don't know. I can't speak to that. That's something you'd really have to ask them about. I would suspect it may be due either to their the kind of formation they had or the kind of exposure they've had to different ideas. But really, they'd have to speak for themselves there. And I hope that helps.
Thank you very much, Anne. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back with more Catholic Answers Live. Open forum today. Any question you've got on the life or faith of the Catholic Church, and you certainly do not have to be Catholic to call, 888-318-7884 is the number. And we'll be right back with more after this.
Hello, everyone. This is country music artist Colin Ray. Do what I do and keep it right here on Catholic Answers Live.
We as Catholics need to stand strong, to be prepared to mount a daily defense, to respond to the many challenges that we, as believers, are presented with every day. Jimmy Akin is here to help. His innovative new book, A Daily Defense, takes up a different challenge for every day of the year, 366 in all, teaching you how you can defend the faith and give answers to Catholics and skeptics alike. And it's user-friendly, with challenges and answers indexed alphabetically, so finding the answers can be quick and easy. Order your copy of A Daily Defense today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their Catholic values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
The Catholic Answers Minute. I'm Father Vincent Serpa. In Luke 24:35, the disciples who met Jesus on the road had returned to Jerusalem and were recounting their meeting with him to the apostles. Jesus stood in their midst with the words, "Peace be with you." He looked at their terrified faces and said, "Why are you troubled?" He showed them his hands and his feet, and then asked for something to eat. He ate some fish in front of them, and this seemed to calm them. He then opened their minds to the scriptures, as he had done earlier with the two on the road. Now, why such fright? Remember, their world had just come crashing down on them. They were afraid of everything. Their protector was now their source of fear, until they recognized that this man was truly the Jesus they knew. So with us. The better we know him, the easier it is for us to recognize him when we're afraid. I'm Father Vincent Serpa for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
And welcome back. Happy to have you with us on Open Forum at Catholic Answers Live today. Lots and lots of calls, so I'll try to get through them as quickly as I can. We go now to Nate in Dallas, Texas, listening on Guadalupe Radio. Nate, you are on with Jimmy Akin. What's your question?
Hi, Jimmy. Thanks for taking my call. So I no longer live at home, but my little brother still does, and I feel that my father is a violent father figure. He has enforce rules sometimes, the rules that weren't even established beforehand, arbitrarily. Mm-hmm. Sometimes in the past he's enforced something that we didn't know was a rule, and that he never enforces it again. Okay. So it's not the first time it's broken. It's not the last time that it's broken. Mm-hmm. He is sober, completely sober.
Okay.
Sometimes he'll just repeat, "You shouldn't have done that," or "I told you not to do this." Mm-hmm. I've been beaten to the point of unconsciousness. Infractions in the past have been cuss words, or not going to church on Sunday, or touching a possession of his without permission. Mm-hmm. So my question is my father a bad father? Is he a bad father figure? Is he a danger to my little brother? Is this an unhealthy atmosphere that my little brother is currently living in? Should I try to intervene or remove him from this relationship or this situation?
Well, it's a difficult set of questions to answer for a variety of reasons. One of them is I have your side of the story, and I'm not challenging your side of the story at all. I respect you. I respect the account you've given me, but it's only partial information, and I haven't heard your father's account of the story, and I'm not there. I can't witness these things for myself. So I don't have a good full-orbed understanding of the situation. I have a partial account. And, obviously while the account is only partial, I mean, assuming what you say is representative of what's going on in the household, well, it doesn't sound like your dad's a good father. Now, I'm sure there are good things he does. He's provided for you and your brother and so forth. He's provided financially. He's provided various forms of guidance. I mean, you mentioned he's big on y'all going to church, so that's a good thing. But if you've been beaten to the point of unconsciousness, then that's something that good fathers don't do. And so that's what I would have to say about that. I don't want to go too far into this, partially because I don't have information enough about the situation to go very far into it, but also because it's of limited value for me to make an assessment of is your dad a good dad or a bad dad. But if you've been beaten to unconsciousness, that's not something that a good dad does. Now, there's also a question from what you said, it sounds like it may have happened once. And obviously, it's a much better thing if it's only happened once than if it's happened repeatedly. Even good men can make bad mistakes on occasion. And that has to be taken into account when we approach the next set of questions about your little brother who's still living at home. You have to make a practical assessment of how much danger your little brother is in. And the answer to that will give you the answer to whether or not to intervene. And how to intervene is another question. You haven't mentioned your mom, and so I don't know if she's still with your dad. I don't know if anyone else is living in the household besides your little brother. But they need to be taken into account in this deliberation as well, both in terms of what kind of danger are they in and what kind of contribution could they make to helping the situation. So if there are other people who are involved, you need to take them into account as well, both in terms of their interests in being safe and in terms of the degree of help that they may be able to be in this situation. You shouldn't necessarily, if there are other people involved, you shouldn't necessarily assume this is all on you. But fundamentally, what you need to do is make a determination of how much danger your brother is in. If he's in grave danger, then you should intervene in one way or another. What that is could take different forms. But there would need to be some kind of attempt to provide additional safety to your brother to get him out of the grave danger. That might mean talking to your father. It might mean having an intervention with your father and other relatives. It might, God forbid, it would need to come to this, but it could come to this, needing to intervene with Child Protective Services. It could be something less than that, like saying, maybe you, my little brother, want to come live with me for a while. You know, there are a bunch of options here, and I can't, you know, help you navigate all those individually. That's something that you, with your own knowledge of the situation and the people involved, are in a better position to assess than I am. But the general principle is if someone is in grave danger, you need to do what you can to get them out of grave danger to the extent it's practically possible given your situation. That's the general principle I want to encourage, because these things happen out there. I want to encourage the audience to pray both about your family situation and all families in similar situations. Because it's a weighty decision. Now, obviously, we can't expect perfection of our parents or anybody else. And sometimes, particularly when we've been on the receiving end of some bad parenting, it can affect how we view the situation. So I would say you need to do your best to set feeling aside and think objectively about the behavior pattern that your father has engaged in, and use that as an assessment for what the likelihood of your brother being harmed and in what ways and how gravely, and try to be as objective about that as you can. Also, I would urge you to seek counsel from others before intervening, because you need to avail yourself of additional resources to help serve as a check on your own subjectivity. So I would talk I wouldn't talk indiscriminately to people about this, because it could get back to your father, and that could harm the situation. It could even bring on a situation that could be worse than the present. But if talking to your mom, if she's around, talking to someone who knows your dad and knows your family situation, who can be discreet about it, would be good. Talking to a local priest or a local counselor about the situation. Those could be helpful resources for you as well. And I'd love to be able to give you a more specific answer, but I think those principles are the best I can give you in terms of how to proceed in working out the best kind of situation that's achievable in the future.
Thank you, Nate. And we will certainly keep you in our prayers as you move forward, because that's a lot that Jimmy just gave you. I will remind you that these shows are available after the show on Catholic.com if you want to listen again to what Jimmy said and go through that again. With some prayerful reflection, take what you can from that. We go now to and again, Nate, we will keep you in our prayers here. We go now to Ryan in South Carolina watching on YouTube. Ryan, your question for Jimmy Akin.
Hey, yeah, I'm glad I got to talk to you, Jimmy. You're my favorite.
Oh, thank you.
All the guys.
Oh, thank
you're
you.
Welcome. But I was as I've grown deeper into the faith. Naturally, I've been Catholic my whole life, but at the age of 17, I really wanted to get closer. And the past 6 or 7 months, I've done a little bit of study on early Christianity, and most importantly, the Council of Nicaea.
Okay.
And you hear so many different things, and I want to hear from you, your side of it, the way I can know the truth, because you hear about different, like the divinity of Jesus was just come about at that council, or the fact that, you know, a certain gospel should have been put in, and Constantine, whether or not he was Christian, and his role in it. And I just want to hear from you, Jimmy, that way I can get a better understanding
of
what happened.
I can give you a brief sketch. Now, we're down towards the end of the hour, so I have to be brief about it, but what I would say is in the early 300s, there was a priest in Egypt, in Alexandria, named Arius. And Arius began to teach that Jesus was a created being, that he wasn't divine or fully divine, that he was basically a kind of super angel. And this caused a very negative reaction. It caused a huge controversy. And the fact that it caused a controversy shows that other people were already regarding Jesus as divine. This is not something that was new. In fact, if you look in the New Testament, there's all kinds of discussion of the fact that Jesus is God. You might want to check out my book, A Daily Defense, for some pointers in that direction, because it goes into that. In any event, the controversy over Arius grew so heated that the Roman Emperor, Constantine I, then called a council and of the bishops to say, listen, this is a huge controversy. We need this settled. You bishops, you are the guys who know the faith. You're the ones in charge of the faith. You guys figure it out. And they did. And they it was the first ecumenical council, and the result was a reaffirmation of the traditional Christian understanding that Jesus is God. They didn't add any gospels to the New Testament. The canon of the New Testament was settled on other grounds. It was not settled at the Council of Nicaea. And you can read more about that too in A Daily Defense. In terms of, was Constantine a Christian? Yeah, he was a Christian. He was a sincere Christian. He had some flaws, so he wasn't a perfect Christian, but that's, you know, none of us are. And in leaders often, and especially in a kind of ancient violent world like that, could have some notable flaws. One of the things that was common in his day was people wouldn't be baptized. Some people wouldn't be baptized until right before they died because they didn't want to have to live up to Christian morality, even though they believed in Christianity. And that's the situation that Constantine was in. He believed in Christianity, but he didn't want to be baptized until shortly before he died because he didn't want to have to live a fully Christian life. When he was baptized, he was away from home, and it happened to be an Arian bishop that baptized him. But he was a Christian. He wasn't a perfect Christian, but he was a sincere Christian. In terms of how to pursue that further, I would suggest going to the original sources if you have the time and the interest. There's a Life of Constantine that was written by the church historian Eusebius, and that would be a primary source. Also, we have writings from people who attended the Council of Nicaea. We have the acts, or the results at least, of the Council of Nicaea. You can see those online at newadvent.org. And we, you know, like I said, we have eyewitness accounts like from Athanasius, who was an Egyptian at the time. He was a priest from actually Arius's own diocese of Alexandria. He was at the council. We have writings of his and other people who were there. And so there's a lot of information out there that you can use to explore these in further depth, depending on the time and the degree to which you want to find out more about them.
Thank you, Ryan. Does that help you, Ryan?
Oh, so much. God bless y'all, guys. I love y'all.
Likewise. Thank you.
Let me ask you a question, Ryan, before you go. You still there?
Yep.
Are you watching us on YouTube Live?
Yeah, that's the only way I do it. I found y'all guys on there.
Well,
and I'm subscribed to I'm also subscribed to your secret club.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you.
Well, that's secret.
Yep.
It's secret. Be sure and tell everybody.
Yeah. Glad we talked about it on the air. But Ryan, the reason I ask is because we've been doing these after shows. Have you caught any of those with Jimmy Akin?
No, I didn't even know there was after shows.
Oh, we're going to do one right now. Wait a couple minutes.
Yeah, we can hear the music. So that means the after show starts as soon as that music stops playing. So thanks for watching us on YouTube, Ryan. Thanks for everybody for your calls today. If you happen to be on Facebook Live, YouTube Live, or Periscope, or if you can get to one of those, we will continue with another segment after that is what we call the after show. Well, we call it
Catholic Answers More.
Catholic Answers More.
Yeah.
So we do it sometimes before, sometimes after. But Ryan, thanks for giving us the chance to talk about that. And we will see you all on Facebook Live, YouTube Live, or Periscope if you hang around for that. And if not, we will see you again tomorrow on Catholic Answers Live. Thanks, Jimmy Akin.
Thank you, Cy Kellett.
See you tomorrow.